Hello, everybody. Welcome to Take the Black Life, the one and only show on the internet where we are talking about things like science fiction, fantasy, Lord of the Rings, Dune, Star Wars, pop culture. You get the idea. We are in week 1300 of lockdown, coming at you live from all of our respective homes. We have a special guest today. I am Dan Selke, winterscoming.net. Mia is Mia Johnson of fancenter.com. And today we have with us Wick writer and Last Kingdom subject matter expert, Corey Smith. Corey, where are you and how are you?
Coming live from Austin, Texas. I'm good. I was just out back chopping down some trees and some bamboo, building a bonfire. So, yeah.
Oh, wow.
Cool.
About as Texas as it can be.
Really? What's the bonfire for? Just for kicks?
No, to get rid of the wood I chopped down. We have a bunch of, we have an infestation of bamboo in the backyard. So just getting rid of all that crap while we're stuck in the house. So, yeah.
City living is very soft and I don't do anything like that. Anyway, yeah. But we wanted to have you on today because you are way into the Netflix show The Last Kingdom, which is a medieval drama. Been going on for, I think, 3 seasons now, but I have a fourth. And they just released a trailer for it. And because you have interviewed a lot of people involved in the show, by the way, cast members.
Yeah. A lot of the cast members from the show, they've all been super great to talk to. And, we got a couple more coming up. The new season comes out April 26th, which is, I don't know what, 13 days from now.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we'll be interviewing a lot more of them. Next week we'll have all those up. We're doing a podcast with a couple of the guys, a couple of the villains, and then we're going to try a couple of the heroes. And so, yeah, we'll have a lot of stuff going up. It's a pretty fantastic show, and we're all kind of excited that the season's, finally returning.
Yeah.
Have you ever watched it, Mia? The Last Kingdom?
I have not. This is all new to me, just starting with the trailer I watched. But it looks pretty exciting.
Yeah, speaking of that, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, I mean, it's pretty awesome. I mean, it's pseudo history. They base it a lot on actual events, but obviously, back in the 9th century, they don't, know everything that happened. Yeah. So they fill in the gaps, but it's a really, really great show. So
if you want a taste, let's watch the trailer for season 4 of The Last Kingdom now.
I've lost my home. I've lost my name. I'm no longer Uhtred of Bevanbar.
How has it come to this?
When the kings are dead, we will sit on Elfhard's throne.
We banished the Danes within our lifetime.
And why do you choose them?
They are my people.
When we fight with one heart!
I know you will do what is right.
Stand back!
Where does it come from, this courage?
All right, Corey. So you're the expert. So just break down basically what's happening here, because I haven't seen a lot of the show either. I've watched the first 2 episodes. I just have never gotten the train. I know I really should. So what's happening in this trailer, and what should newcomers or people who are into it take from it, like the number one thing?
Well, season 3 was, the first 3 seasons of the show, the two primary characters are Uhtred and King Alfred. King Alfred's a historical figure in England. He, spoiler alert, passes away in the 3rd season, and so season 4 is a bit of kind of like a reset for everybody. So there's a lot of, there's new monarchs, everybody's kind of going in a new direction. Think of it like kind of like Game of Thrones season 5, everything built up over the first 3 seasons and it all exploded, and now everybody's moving off into new directions. So it's kind of a reset. So that'll be interesting to see all the new dynamics between all the characters. So it's kind of a good point to pick up the series. You'd be missing some of the backstory, but There's a lot of new characters coming in this season. There's a lot of new relationships that are going to be built. And so it's, like I said, a reset, I think, is a really good word for it.
Solid enough.
Yeah, I was okay. So, and I'm still trying to like get used to all of this. I saw, I was going through the Reddit and there were some people talking about like a battle that was happening like 45 seconds in, where it's like one team on one side, one team on the other. Who are those people and what are they fighting about? What could they be fighting about?
So it's, like I said, it's a historical drama. So it's all based on the Saxons and the Danish invasions. So, you know, the last kingdom in the first season is Wessex, because the Danes have basically conquered all of England at that point. Mm-hmm. And so over the, you know, they pushed back over the first three seasons, and now they're starting to take back a lot of the land that the Danes have conquered, but they're obviously not going anywhere easily. So you're seeing the Danes and the Saxons in that battle. So which is basically what you see the first three seasons. Anytime anybody fights, it's Danes and Saxons. So so that's who you're seeing there.
Okay. Well, I was wondering, is there any like big sort of buildup that we think is going to happen in season four. As far as battle four, right?
Season four. Yeah. I mean, so the show is based on a series of novels by Bernard Cornwell, and they basically covered, they're very good, easy read, super entertaining. I mean, you can usually get through one of, you know, I mean, you can get through them in, I don't know, 5 or 6 hours. They're not, you know, but they're fun. They're good read.
He's great in general, I think.
Yeah.
And he's got a huge catalog of books. I mean, that guy turns books out. He's one of those people who just turns books out on a regular basis, like clockwork. So, unlike some other authors, and will remain nameless. But from the books, you can kind of, you know, they don't adapt them perfectly well, but they don't adapt them exactly how they are in the book.
Yeah.
But the major events stay the same. So there's. Book readers kind of have a good idea of what battle we're looking at there and what we're seeing. I don't think it'll change too much. You know, they might have one person on a different side or something like that, or somebody dies that didn't in the books. But, I mean, we kind of know what that battle is, and it's based on a historical battle as well. So
some comments from the people are fans of The Last Kingdom here. We got Julie saying, I binge watched it when I was able to catch the free trial on Netflix, hoping to be able to catch the last season somehow. I can't tell you what to get, Julie, but I think Netflix is worth it for all the great programming. Love The Last Kingdom, says Sabrina. Looks great. Can't wait, says Ronnie. So yeah, it definitely has a following. I've been wondering, like, The Last Kingdom has always seemed to me to, like, have a passionate following, but has never quite, like, exploded, like, into huge popularity the way, like, a Game of Thrones or even a Vikings has. Like, Vikings is a lot of the same, like, historical figures even in The Last Kingdom.
Yeah, it does. But they share a lot of the same characters, especially early on in the series. Vikings is kind of set earlier, I don't know, right. maybe 10, 15 years earlier. So most of those characters, by the time Last Kingdom rolls around, are kind of on their last legs. So it doesn't share a lot of them for very long.
Right.
But yeah, it is kind of odd that it hasn't necessarily gotten majorly popular, but it's so well done that it is kind of mystifying to me.
Like, do you think that it could have a chance to do that now? Because I will say, it looks like they're pouring more and more resources into it, like, just based on the trailer. Like, that is really a step up from what they've been doing before.
Right, and so the first two seasons were a co-production between the BBC and Netflix.
Right.
And then in the third season, Netflix took on full control. In the third season, you can definitely see the difference of when the budget went up.
That Netflix money.
Yeah, I got the Netflix money. So, and then just judging by the trailer, I would say, again, we're looking at a jump up in terms of what they spent and the battles and things of that nature. Because, you know, the first two seasons, there's a couple of major battles, but they're kind of... They take place at the end of the season, and during the season, anytime you run into a battle, it's kind of a, hey, we're going to battle and roll credits. And so now you're actually seeing a lot of those, you know, the individual moments in the battle instead of kind of the big overarching shot. So,
right. I mean, I wonder if now is the time, maybe, because it's so respected as a show. It's so beloved. And now we're all at home with nothing to do and we're starved for content. And if the Tiger King can blow up like that, I don't see why a great new show like this couldn't maybe have its moment in the sun.
Yeah, and it's so well written, and the characters are really intricate, and it's I'd say that, you know, the difference between like Vikings and this is it's a lot more compact. So it focuses on a smaller group of characters. There's big things going on, and there's, you know, major events, but it really focuses on a smaller group of characters as opposed to just all these people in 100 different places doing things like, you know, like on Vikings or Game of Thrones. So I think, you know, people could really latch on to it. And, you know, the first season, there's a little bit of a learning curve. But, you know, you get over it. And then once you get rolling, you know, it's like any show. I mean, the first season is going to have the learning curve, and then right. You start rolling with it. So.
Cool. So there's another question. And I want to ask about, Uhtred?
Uhtred, yeah. Alexander okay. Draymond. That's the main character. Uhtred is the main character.
Okay. Let's see here. Dan, well, you know what, Dan? I'll let you figure this one out, because we have two questions. One about him returning to Babenberg, and then one about his love interest. Or we can touch on both of those topics and kind of meld them into one.
Yeah, so Babenberg is his ancestral home that he kind of get his uncle usurps him as a child. In the first, it's the first episode of the series. So
I have seen that.
Yeah. And so his uncle kind of takes over, Babenberg. It's a, you know, it's a big, huge fortress that's pretty much impenetrable. And, you know, Uhtred spends the first three seasons, you know, initially he flees south to Wessex to gain power and money to go take back Babenberg. But one thing leads to another, and he just gets caught up in everything going on. And so he's never actually made it back. So to see that in the trailer is kind of a big deal, to see that he's finally going to go back to his home, whether he'll end up reclaiming it or, you know, getting, you know, denied, who knows, but. That was a big moment to see that in the trailer. So
that he's coming home. Interesting.
And his love, his love interest, Uhtred's a bit of a ladies' man. You know, Alexander Draymond is a incredibly good looking man, and it happens. And so, and he's, you know, he's a warrior. He's a badass. And
wait, let me make sure I know what he looks like.
He's kind of like long hair Jon Snow a bit in the face department.
Yeah, but minus the, he doesn't have the emo boy energy going on.
No.
I totally see it.
You know, especially early on, he's like raw, you know, masculinity early on. And then he's like any kind of guy, you know, in his early 20s, he's, you know, all testosterone, and then as he grows older, he starts to, you know, think and use his brain. But so, yeah, his love interest, you know, they kind of, it looks like they're setting him up to have a relationship with Ethelfled, who is names. Oh, it's ridiculous. Writing articles on this series is just a challenge in consonants, you know, because you got Ethelfled, Ethelwald, Ethelred, Uhtred. I'm trying to think some of the
it's
other
like
ones.
By a consonant, people.
Yeah, Aelswith. I mean, it's just ridiculous. And then, you know, you'll have your random guys named Edward. so it's just an Alfred. Alfred and Edward were always the easy ones to spell.
Normal guys.
Yeah, and then obviously even then too, when you know, and then the actors, of course, their names, they do a good job of casting, you know, Danish actors for the Danes and stuff like that. And so, you know, you get all kinds of wild names there too. So that's always fun. But yeah, it looks like he's gonna maybe start some sort of relationship with Ethelflaed, who is King Alfred's daughter. So he's the sister of King Edward, and she kind of is set up as one of the first female rulers in England, of the Kingdom of Mercia. So she's not just a random, you know, princess or something like that. So
yeah, very cool. As Diane points out, the names are all real. It's history, yeah, which is true. Correct. But it's one of those times where you're like, I still wish history would have included more consonants. Like, I don't care if they're real. I want them to be spelled easier.
Yeah, and it's very hard on spell check and all that stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Anytime I write an article, I keep the IMDb list up because it's just like the actor's name. The actor's names I got, but you know, Ethelflaed and Ethelred and, you know, Ethelwald and Aelswith. It's just like, oh my Lord, how am I supposed to remember where that extra E and the extra A go and all that? So
do the old copy and paste.
Yep. It's a lot of copying and pasting. So
I kind of reminds me of Game of Thrones. There was like Daenerys and Viserys, and then Uncle Kevin was thrown in there too for fun.
Yeah.
It's real similar to that. Yeah.
And as Debbie says, Mia, he's hot, very Jon Snowish. So we definitely
I am. I've got my second screen, and I've just got all the pictures of
him. Perfect. I do have to watch it. I swear to God, I will. Just getting around to it. All right, Corey, do you have any other thing you want to say about Last Kingdom? Anything else we should know before we move on?
Trying to think. No, I mean, I'm just excited to see where it goes because I think. Yeah. You know, season three, we saw, like I said, Netflix, you know, assumed kind of full, you know, control and pumped up the budget. And it looks like they're doing that again. And so I think it'll be a lot of fun to see how much it progresses because they actually also have had quite a bit of time between the seasons at this point, about a year and a half.
That's true.
Which is a little bit longer than normal for them. So. And obviously, as we're all stuck in the house, I could deal with a new show, you know, a season of a new show to watch because it's, you know, there's not a whole lot else to do at night when you're not allowed to go out. So, yeah, I think it'll be fun. I'm excited to see where it goes and to see how successful it is.
Yeah, as Sherry says, I have to watch it. I agree. And I'm looking forward to it in 26 and look forward to Wick with our interviews with the cast coming up this week and next week. I'm looking forward to that.
Like I said, we'll have some interviews with a lot of the new characters, and then we're going to be doing some Take the Black podcast with a couple of the cast members.
That's pretty fun.
You know, we'll talk all the behind-the-scenes stories they got. They got some wonderful stories from set. And, you know, so we're going to be doing a lot of coverage, you know, the week before and the week after, definitely.
Okay. Corey, I cannot thank you enough for dropping by. A million thank yous.
Thank you.
Not a problem. And thanks for having me, guys.
Yeah, of course. Have a great night.
All right. We'll talk to y'all later.
Adios. All right. Dear readers, I think for a second, it might be a little wonky as we readjust back to two screens. So just bear with us for one sec. You know, earlier, you may have like seen a message flash on my screen while I was messaging Mia. Okay. I didn't know that happened in Skype. What's the point of... like having a messenger app and we just flash it. I could just tell you if I don't get that at all. But
yeah,
now,
well,
you know, we're all learning together here how to do shows from home. So that's something
that's perfect.
I don't know. I think we are. I think we're more or less back. All right. Our next topic I wanted to cover because this was a big one that came out yesterday was Dune by Frank Herbert. Dune. directed by a man whose name I also can't pronounce.
Okay, good luck.
Denis Villeneuve. Dennis, my man Dennis.
Yes, yeah.
First of all, Mia, what's your familiarity with Dune? Are you into
it at all? I know absolutely nothing about Dune.
Okay.
I just brushed up on it yesterday. Please.
That's true. You're the pictures. So Dune is a 1965 novel by Frank Herbert. Very, very, very inspirational. Like, Star Wars would not exist if not for Dune. That is definitely true. It's been described as, like, Game of Thrones in space a little bit. It's basically We're in the far future. We have technology. We're on a desert planet. It's all about these houses kind of fighting for control of this one planet, Arrakis, aka Dune, that produces a very valuable resource. And I'll be honest, I read it as like a middle schooler, and I read it again recently to like to get ready for like the new movie.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure how you guys in the audience feel, but I always found it kind of cold and a little bit hard to get into. It's very clinical-ish, but it's definitely well written, and again, very influential. Like it's hard to like kind of move into space and not be a little familiar with it. So I try to do that, and I'll try it again. And the movie, I think, looks really cool. And we got some images yesterday of some of the characters and the actors, which, by the way, it's completely stacked with actors. It's really quite remarkable.
Yeah, I was surprised. I was like, oh my goodness. Wow.
And I will say, this stuff looks pretty cool. I'm going to go over a little bit and see what we have. First up, we have Timothy Chalamet, who is definitely... Timothy. Who is definitely an It Man of the moment, right? I mean, he's pretty right now. As Paul Atreides, who's the main character of Dune. He's kind of like, you know, he's our Jon Snow. He's our Uhtred Bithenberg. He's our Luke Skywalker. He's our main guy while following the Harry's journey and stuff with his mother, the Lady Jessica.
Yeah.
It's also really crucial to the story. Yeah. I love the way it looks. I love the landscape.
I was reading in the Vanity Fair article that came with this. I believe they are shooting, out in the desert. And right. Timothy Chalamet was talking about just how hot, like over 100 degrees it would be. And on top of that, they have to wear these suits I have to give them props for being fitted in this. I would like probably just automatically pass out, but it looks so good.
And then it's very hard. And it does look good. These are, by the way, this is the dork. These are still suits. Because you see Mia on Dune, it's very, very dry and very, very hot. Uh-huh. And when you're out, and there's no water anywhere. So a still suit like recycles the body's moisture and then feeds it to you.
I also read about that. I didn't know about the feeding it to you part.
Oh yeah. It's all about recycling. Dune is like a big thing for like, you know, it's a big epic and everything. It's also like really into ecology. It gets into like the biology of the planet. There is a lot going on in Dune. I'll never say that it's not like a rich book. Maybe not like a book I loved. It's hard to get into. You'll see.
Yeah.
Sherry says that it's a hard book to get into, and I kind of agree with that. Dune in the Desert. But we also have Sharon Duncan Brewster as Liet Kynes.
Yeah,
who is a leader of the Fremen tribe, who are the native inhabitants of Dune. And this one's interesting because in the books, Liet Kynes is a man, and they've flipped the gender here for it.
Yeah,
which I think is perfectly fine. I mean, this was 1965. Let's not beat around the bush. They weren't including tons of women.
I think the director was like consciously trying to make a choice. Like, you know, how can we incorporate more women into the film? Like, again, I don't know really anything about the characters, but they were saying that Lady Jessica gets a bigger role kind of than in the book. So I don't know what that means. I mean, obviously, we're going to have to see the movie to find out what it means for sure. But they were like, yeah, we've got more women. We're going to have, you know, all those things. We'll see. But yeah, I don't mind the switch at all with the characters.
No, it's fine. And I mean, I've read the book, like, the character will work either way. And again, the look is great. I think the photography is really, really beautiful. So I'm looking forward to that. We also have, on our parade of huge names, Zendaya's in this. Who again, is like a really hot property right now. Definitely someone who's sought after. She is playing Chani, another member of the Fremen tribe, and... you know, Paul's eventual love interest. I'm sure it's not a giant spoiler to say there is one. There's always one, isn't there?
Yeah.
And again, looking really cool. I just like the starkness and the detail of photography. And you'll notice her eyes are like
blue-ish. They're going blue.
That's Cosmia. In Dune, it's all about this thing called a spice, which is this substance that only grows there. It's like the super drug that makes you like a super person. But it also turns your eyes all weird and blue. So get ready for that.
Very interesting.
It is I wonder if I sound like a breathless nerd right now talking about you and the audience can decide that for me. But yeah, I mean, a lot of good people in this. Also,
let's move on to my favorite picture, unless you have something else to say.
Oh, no, that was it. If Zendaya and Shyamalan weren't enough, we also have Oscar Poe Dameron Isaac as Duke Leto Atreides, Paul's father.
He's literally staring into my soul in this photo. I can't believe it.
I was going to ask, why is this your favorite?
It's Oscar Isaac. Look how awesome. I'm not going to curse in this, but look how awesome he looks. I mean,
go ahead.
Oh my gosh. No, it's, I think it's just Oscar Isaac, and he just exudes, you know, this greatness and sexiness. Like, can we be real?
Yeah, go ahead. Yeah.
Everyone was going wild, thirsting over this photograph. And I absolutely love it. I was like, I need more Poe Dameron. I need Poe Dameron with a beard. I don't even remember. It's Oscar Isaac. That's the Star Wars nerd in me.
I'm like, that is a piercing stare, is what that is.
Yeah.
Because it's interesting. Like, in the old movie, they were dressed like Napoleonic outfits, like military folk, and now it's like, no, space armor. Like, space, we are going like, it's full Knights of the Round Table in space.
Yeah.
It's giving me, which is fun. I'm into it.
Yeah. Sword. I think that's Josh Brolin behind him, it looks like.
Yes, it is. Oh yeah, he's in this. Josh Brolin's in this.
Yes.
Thanos is in this.
Thanos is just gonna snap everyone out of the picture.
As Gurney Halleck, the warrior/poet-musician, who's a cool character. I do like him. He's pretty prominent.
What a great title.
It is. And then finally, we have another big star. It weren't enough already. Jason Momoa is in this. I mean, if we're talking about kind of sexy dudes who are kind of the moment, Oscar Isaac, Jason Momoa. Oh, I'm not sure where Josh Brolin ranks in that, but all in the same.
Yeah. Good-looking dudes category. Yeah.
Lots. And he is playing Duncan Idaho, the sword master of House Atreides. Yeah. They're all like...
What a name out of all this.
That is
Duncan Idaho.
I love sci-fi names. Like,
yeah.
We were just talking about Æthelflaed and and Æthelred and all those things over there, which are based in history. And now you have names here that like run the gamut from... I guess they're pretty normal. Like Lady Jessica. Leto Atreides. Leto's not a crazy name. Paul. And then Duncan Idaho, kind of, like, it sounds like something you would get in, like a backwoods part of the country or something.
Yeah.
Like, that's his nickname.
It's like one of those random name generators, like, you know, the name of your fifth grade teacher plus the last state you were in.
But again, and that photo is, oh, by the way, he's clean shaven in that thing. Have I ever seen him clean shaven in this?
I feel like I might have, but I don't remember who, what, when, where, why. But it is a little, it's a little offsetting, even though he's kind of like crouched. You can't really see him that much. So I think that kind of helps.
But yeah, definitely a terrific cast. So I will say this. I am not the biggest fan, as Sherry says, yummy. I mean, yeah, I got to agree. There's a lot of people here. He's giving you a glower, too. Everyone glowers in this thing.
Yeah.
I'm not the biggest fan of Dune, the book. I find it hard to kind of break through. I read the second one, too. I'm trying here, guys. I am trying.
Yeah.
But I do love Denis Villeneuve's movies. I loved Arrival. I love the new Blade Runner. I think he has a really great way with visuals and pacing, which are very deliberately paced. Like, they really draw you in. It's in a real mood. So I think if anybody can, and this does seem like kind of well suited to his talents. So, and I think it does look really cool. So I am into it. This is going to be part one of a two-part adaptation of the book. I mean, I'm not sure how I feel about that. I mean, it is a big, complex book. It's not the Hobbit thing with it for no reason.
Yeah. I liked Arrival. I still haven't seen the new Blade Runner, which I like. It's probably something right up my alley anyway. But I did really like Arrival. So Not that I know, like I said, a ton about this, you know, the whole Dune thing, but I'm at least hopeful. It sounds like he's kind of got what it takes to execute it right and make it fun and interesting.
I think that's right. Yeah. He's, if anybody can execute this, it's Denis Villeneuve. I love David Lynch. I'm a huge David Lynch fan, but he did a version movie back in '84, and it's like he didn't quite find his way. So it's high time for a new one. And yeah, I'm looking forward to it. Hopefully, it comes out in December, assuming the coronavirus doesn't knock it off.
I know.
Oh well. So that's June. What's next on the agenda?
On to the next. Let's talk some Marvel things. This was last Thursday, I believe. Taika Waititi, the great, great, brilliant director of Thor Ragnarok and so many others, went on Instagram Live for a Thor Ragnarok watch party. So what he did was literally like he had his phone with him. He had Instagram on his phone and he had his laptop. Basically watching the movie, but just answering people's questions about, like, you know, what's going to happen in Thor Love and Thunder, who's coming back, blah, blah, blah. But he did actually reveal a couple of things about Thor Love and Thunder, which is Thor 4. So the first thing he revealed, I love that. First thing he revealed, do you remember Meek from Thor Ragnarok? It was like Korg's friend.
I mean,
weird, like,
I looked it
alien
up.
Baby.
Off the top of my head, no. But I did go back. No. Yes.
Okay, yeah, Meek was the one who's like Korg's friend, and he died, and he didn't die, and then they were also in Infinity War. He released some concept art that he revealed about Meek. He said that Meek is a woman, is female, so that's new. Everybody's like, okay, I guess that's fine. Meek's got some sexy legs going on, and I don't know if that's Taika Waititi's humor. To do this type of thing, or if it's going to be like a legit, you know, image or concept that'll be used in the movie. But he is really, really funny about all that. The other thing is, do you remember what New Asgard is all about?
Okay. Yes, that was okay. Asgard got destroyed in Thor Ragnarok, and they traveled to Earth.
Yes.
And they kind of got interrupted by like the endgame events and everything, but basically the Asgardians now just live on like a fjord and are ruled over by Tessa Thompson, right?
Yeah, that's pretty much it, yeah. So they're living in Norway now, and it's called New Asgard, and he also revealed a new image of that, which it kind of just looks like a podge of, like, you know, a little bit of Norway, a little bit of old Asgard. And so it just kind of looks like, obviously, we're going to see more of that and see, you know, is President Trump or whoever going to evict the Asgardians? No.
Out of Norway?
Yeah. It's like, can't be here. It's my jurisdiction now. No, I'm joking. So he also revealed a couple of things about who might be in the new movie. He is thinking that space sharks could be in it. And those are... space sharks. Those are intergalactic sharks that go through the cosmos or whatever. And they were first introduced in the X-Men. So people are kind of like, oh my gosh, an X-Men, you know, thing in an MCU thing.
That's true.
That's here, yeah.
That does have to happen eventually because they now own X-Men. Yeah. So the amount of time gets integrated. Like literal sharks, like Jaws sharks, but in space?
Yeah, just they're just sharks, man.
All right, cool. I'm into it.
That's so Taika Waititi, though.
That is very that's very right.
Yeah.
Like, are we talking about, like, Denis Villeneuve being, like, very kind of deliberate and paced? Like, Taika Waititi just, like, blah, throw everything against the wall. Yeah. It's great. They're both really good. Yeah.
And then, so the final thing that he talked about was some people kind of asked, like, who's coming back and who's not. A lot of people wanted to know about Christian Bale, if he would be playing, oh, my gosh. Beta Ray Bill, he said he didn't really know. He couldn't really give any answers on that. Silver Surfer is not going to be in Thor Love and Thunder. And he did not reveal if Loki's going to be in Thor Love and Thunder either. Probably, obviously, because we've got a whole series to watch. We'll figure out what happens then.
I bet.
Lots of big, yeah.
Cameo.
There's got to be something there.
They know where their bread is buttered.
Exactly. Moving on now, we also have James Gunn, who's on Twitter to kind of talk about his upcoming projects. He's working on
a lot. Like, did you see that thread today where he was like, here's a thread about all the movie sequels that are better than the originals. Like, yeah. Everyone's just kind of being bored and just taking a Twitter.
Wait, talking he did about that stuff. Today?
Yeah, it was like 20 movies. Like, James Gunn, like, here's all the sequels that are better than the originals. Like, The Godfather Part 2, Aliens, that kind of thing.
I wonder if he was so inspired by fansided.com. Right now, we're actually running a whole week of content about reboots and sequels and redos and all that stuff. So I think that maybe James Gunn is watching Fansided. I'm just
going to think he's definitely watching Fansided. I don't know why you're hedging. Like, absolutely. Which one of you is James Gunn?
Yeah. So he gave an update basically on Guardians of the Galaxy 3. And he says right now it's all, you know, nothing's changed. He says right now the plans with Volume 3 are exactly the same as they were before coronavirus. Which to me, I'm like, there was never really a release date for Guardians of Galaxy 3 anyway. So it's like, does this mean that the plan is there is no plan?
You can't delay something if it has no release date. Yeah. It's one of those.
It's got the galaxy brain going on. And then, you know, over on the DC side, where he's working on the Suicide Squad, that is technically still set to open August 2021. And he said right now there's no reason for the Suicide Squad release date to move. We are ahead of schedule. We're extremely fortunate to wrap shooting and set up editing from our homes due to a post-production team in studio with Foresight before quarantine. So looks like he's got everything under control.
That's great. I mean, we're all looking for kind of rays of hope with the situation, right? Like, we all, and there are other things that are a lot more important than what movies are coming out, but I keep wanting to see, like, a story about, okay, everything's safe, and we're starting up production again to, like, see, okay, it can happen, right? Exactly. And I do like hearing that there are some things in the pipeline that aren't going to be affected, or at least not hugely affected by what's going on now.
It does make me wonder, and I feel like we had this conversation before about, you know, we've got all these projects, especially like MCU movies and DCEU movies, where they're kind of like, you know, being pushed back and taking other spots. But I mean, I guess according to him, it's no problem. So it's good to hear.
Yeah. I hope everything is wrapped up pretty, as we all get over this sooner rather than later.
Yeah.
And then we just, you know, tell our kids about this really weird time that we went through four years ago. It's going to be a good time.
Oh, man, I watched so much TV. I sat on the couch all day. It was horrible. No, but it's more serious than that. But, you know, hey, I was like, I was thinking about this yesterday. I was like, out of all the tragedies that could have happened in my lifetime, I cannot be complaining that I don't, you know, the worst or best thing that I can do is not go outside. So.
Oh, and I mean, like, look, like, I'm not sure if it says on the show or not, but, like, had this happened, even 10 years ago, it would have been a whole different ballgame. Like, we wouldn't have been able to do as much conferencing, like, people that work in general. I mean, people are obviously hurting, it's horrible, but, I mean, I guess it's, if you're gonna have a plague, have it when there's a well-developed technological infrastructure. Speaking of well-developed technological infrastructure, let's talk, before we get to our audience question, which we did get, by the way, and I want to answer because it's really, really cool.
Yeah.
Let's discuss the latest episode of Westworld, wherein Dolores Abernathy revealed, I'm going to try to say this so it makes sense in my head, hacked into the supercomputer that determines everybody's paths in life, sent all of the information about what they were destined to do to their phones. They read it, freaked out, and there was mass bedlam. What did you think of the big Westworld twist?
You know, I don't even know where to begin, obviously. I think what's interesting, I guess I'll start here, is talking about, like, the title of it was genre.
Yes.
You kind of find that out a little bit midway through, because Caleb gets drugged by the head of Insight, you know, the people who own all the information. And then he starts going through these weird phases where he's seeing in black and white, or, you know, he hears romance music or Flight of the Valkyries. And then it's like, his friend Marshawn Lynch tells him, oh, you're on genre, you know, it's going to be a trip and you better watch out for the climax. to me, and I've watched this episode twice, it started out a little weird because like this is like nothing Westworld has ever done before. It is right. way, way, way far out there, way trippy. And I didn't know what to think of it because it was just totally so different.
Yeah, same with him.
But watching it the second time, I did appreciate it a little bit more, and how they kind of use that switch up to tell the story and how they use it to kind of, you know, reveal the big twist, obviously. And then there's so many big moral things about it, too. Like Caleb he began to question Dolores toward the end of the episode. And it kind of set the stage for, okay, what's going to happen next with their relationship? Because he admired her up until a point.
Who's more admirable? Yeah. I mean, could you help me then? Because I was going back and forth. It's like, okay, is this whole Caleb's on a drug trip and going through like different movie genres, is this brilliant or gimmicky and dumb? Like, I couldn't quite tell, honestly. So, what do you think was the point of his drug trip? Because like the plot happened whether he was tripping or not.
Of course, yeah. I really think it was something, just an artistic liberty, if you think on the, I think Anna Forrester, something like that. It was, yeah, it was creatively, it was kind of interesting. Again, yeah, as far as contributing to the plot, it's not like, I think it could have been used as a plot device, like, you know, if he's over here tripping, like, you know, he messes up Dolores or he slows her down, but he was actually pretty fine. I was going to say, it's not generally a good response. I don't know.
The best one was when he was in the train station and like the lights were pulsing with time for music. That was fun. I'd take that.
Yeah, it was fun. It was, I will say my first reaction, which was not so positive. I was just, it was a big WTF is this. This is not the Westworld I remember. I want my old Westworld back. Where's Bernard? Where's Maeve? You know, I was like kicking and screaming on the floor. Because it really does feel like they turned it into the Dolores show, where it's kind of like in the last two seasons, they kind of let, you know, everybody kind of have their own spotlight. This one is like, it's just all Dolores, you know?
I mean, she definitely is the driving force behind it. I mean, she's trying to liberate humanity. Was humanity liberated? Okay, here was my problem with that whole twist. And like, when she revealed everyone's, you know, paths to them. Mm-hmm. My problem was like, everyone was freaking out and like, oh, now we're riding side saddle on buses and throwing bricks through windows. I'd be like, you know what? No. If people found out that they were scheduled for like suicide in 20 years, I bet a lot of people just go like, no, I'm not. Put it away and ignore things. I really do. I don't think people think that deeply about that. I think a lot of them would just.
Yeah, like, you know what? I can imagine me going on Twitter and being like, dang, you know, they said I'm a failure. R.I.P.
Oh, Twitter would freak out.
There would be so many memes. Yeah, I don't think I'd be setting a bus on fire. So in a way, it's kind of they're getting into that fantastical sense where they're like, ooh, it's the worst case scenario. You know, they start looting and rioting in the streets when it's more like, yeah, I don't know. Yeah, I didn't really think about that.
Like, that's I couldn't have it like that. That's coming into my head. Like, no, they and on that train, like every single person had like, your daughter's gonna die. Everyone hates. Like, did nobody have you're doing real good. You're scheduled for a promotion in a year.
Yeah. Like, you got to be that humble guy where he's like, oh man, it must suck. Sorry, guys. Like, what do yours say? Don't worry about it. Don't worry about what mine says.
I did like it, the episode. I'm enjoying watching. I'm enjoying watching the season. Just honestly, I feel like I was really hurt by that second season. And I'm having I really do.
It's funny. I feel opposite. Like, I feel fine with the second season. This season is just so far off the wall for me. Yeah. That it's taken me a while to process everything that's happening. Like, I think I like it as kind of like its own separate entity, but when I think back and remember that this is Westworld, then that's kind of when it's back to reality. And I'm like, oh, right. Yeah, what is this?
I am curious. I'm going to keep watching. There are only three episodes left. We'll see what happens. Yeah. And finally, last week, I asked y'all to go on iTunes, leave a review of this program, Pick the Black Live, and leave a question. And to my delight, someone did. I wasn't really sure if it would work. But Chris Comp asked a really good question on his iTunes review that I thought was obviously really, really good and thought provoking. Yeah. Okay, so this is the first Take the Black Live audience question. From Craig Comp. Knowing how it ends, would you recommend Game of Thrones to someone who has never watched it? And I think that's a great question and something I have thought about, because Game of Thrones is such, you know, like, it's not like The Simpsons with like a discrete, like with standalone episodes. Like, you can watch the first however many seasons, like just sign off and be fine for the rest of your life. Like, Game of Thrones is a serialized story. Like, if the whole thing all the way through doesn't kind of hold up, there's a part of me that's like, is the whole thing ruined then? Because it doesn't really end to what everybody really wanted it to be. So I think that's the question I was wrestling with there. I would still say yes. I think that the show is influential and good and heartfelt and made with enough real passion to be worth watching. I didn't love the ending. Although, I tell you what, I am looking forward to, like, a few years down the line when we all have think pieces looking back on it and being like, was it really that bad? I guarantee that will happen in, like, T-minus 2 years. So I still recommend it, yes. But it does...
Yeah.
It is a harder question for Game of Thrones because it's so serialized and all of a piece. Like, I have no problem recommending, like, Buffy the Vampire Slayer. If you don't like the last season, just sub season 5 and you're fine. Okay, sorry. Yeah. What do you think?
Oh, you know, I think without hesitation, I say yes. And this kind of reminds me of a Westworld question. Same thing I was grappling with too. But for Game of Thrones specifically, I think that you can't discount every single individual and the ride that you've had along with it. There are some really awesome, great moments and great characters, character development. And just like even mini story arcs that are like, you know, I think if you were to completely ignore it, you would be sorely missing out. And so I'm glad that I got into it. You know, I dropped out because I was hurt after the Red Wedding. And then, you know, I came back, you know, once we started doing the finale coverage. But I would say that despite being hurt, it doesn't kind of ruin, in hindsight, it doesn't ruin all of the good memories that the show produced, you know, throughout all the seasons.
Yeah.
But back to Westworld, I was thinking, because I recommended before the season 3 that my dad watches Westworld. And now I was thinking, oh man, you know, I don't know if he's going to like season 3 or I don't, but I was like, I still, that doesn't discount the fact that I enjoyed, you know, season 1 or, you know, whatever season 2 was. So I still think it's worth at least having that experience.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, every experience you have, if it makes you feel something, it's kind of worth having. I know it's kind of a hokey thing to say, but I believe that. And Game of Thrones really took you through a whole, at least for me, a whole spectrum of human emotion. I very much value it. And I think it's going to kind of settle with time, like the kind of roiling of the ending that we'll see it sort of be put into context as it goes on. So yeah, I'm very happy to watch it. I will say, I haven't gone back to watch it again yet. I'm still not there, but sometime soon.
It's all right.
The commenters are with us, more or less, by the way. Sherry says, GOT is a must-see. Yeah, the journey through the season was definitely worth it, even though the ending had its flaws, says Debbie.
Mm-hmm.
I don't care what anyone else says. Game of Thrones would be 8 fun years. My answer would be yes, says Julie. Absolutely amen, says Jen. Yes, I'm all there. By the way, I had to read this coming from Jen, because it's a gold mine, as usual. I missed y'all last week. I would have definitely given Game of Thrones is what got me here and stuck with y'all, even though the skinny fellow with glasses isn't around.
Oh.
Yep, gotta love skinny fellow with glasses. We'll get him on here eventually to talk about something or other. But, you know, he's at home.
Uh-huh.
And if you want us to answer a question that you have, absolutely go on iTunes, leave a review, as many stars as possible, if you please, or one, whatever. But yeah, five is good. And leave a question, and we will 100% answer it here, next show after that, whatever. And maybe we'll even find a way for you to ask questions without a review, because I think that once you leave a review, can you do it again? Probably not.
Good question.
We'll think about it.
Something to look into.
Would you guys be interested in like a question and answer session with us? I guess you already asked questions here in the comments.
Yeah, that's true.
They're like,
I have enough questions. Yeah.
Yeah, they're more like thoughtful ways to do it, I guess. And we'll think about it. Yeah, and it really says each episode of season 8 is great in hindsight. I think there are great things about all of them. I definitely do.
Yeah.
This was a fun show. We had on Corey Smith. We talked about The Last Kingdom. We discussed the beginning of this Dune, something with Marvel. What a lot of ground we covered, Mia. How do you feel?
A lot. It's, you know, it's nice to do this in the middle of the day, have something to energize me, somebody to talk to.
Yes. It's always nice to connect with people outside of my ice and bubble. I hope you're okay in your apartment. I hope everyone else out there okay.
Thank you.
Yeah, stay safe, wash your hands. If you have any questions, leave us. Or no, you don't have to have any questions, as Jay Casey says, whichever. And we'll be back next Wednesday at 4 p.m. Central Standard Time on the Wednesday Facebook page for more news, analysis, and what have you. Bye-bye.
Bye, everyone.